Hello and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon. We are back for day two of our society article. It's the month of July. I hope you're enjoying your summer, and we are glad that you've joined us today. And I have two panelists back in the studio with me today. First, Ellen, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
And Ellen, tell us something that you want to remind our listeners of from yesterday.
Well, yesterday we talked a lot about this idea that smart gadgets are kind of making their way into our personal lives even more than they are now. And I like this idea of a butler. You know, that imagery didn't really make it into my mind beforehand. But when we talked about smart gadgets as butlers, it fits.
Okay, yes, and you make a good point there. Smart gadgets, like smartphones, they're already in our lives, but it will happen even more so in the future. And Linda, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Brendan. Good to be here.
And remind us about yesterday's lesson.
And as we become more of a smart society with more smart gadgets in our lives and in our home, we become more dependent on these things, and it might cause us to feel less independent or less in control of our lives. So there's a flip side or a negative side to all of these smart gadgets.
Yes, there at the top, I asked the question, who's in control? And as we look forward, as we look to the future, we see that maybe we are giving up more and more control. And of course, we can control how much control we give up. I'm thinking of that there at the top of page 39. We see a man sitting there, and we see there in the caption that there are 13 different types of internet-connected gadgets. Well, that's probably helping him a lot, at least to some degree. But he can unhook some of those gadgets or turn them all off if he wants to. So we do still have control. Maybe we are worrying too much about this, or maybe we just have to learn how much control we really want to give up. And I think something that's important to remember is that as we have gadgets that are becoming more and more intelligent, we don't want to lose our intelligence, right? We don't want to learn how to think. Thinking critically, thinking how to be creative. I think that's one of the major dangers here. And why is that? What did we learn yesterday about creativity, Linda?
Well, creativity is what makes us more unique, what makes us more individual. So if we rely on smart gadgets all the time to make our decisions or to remind us of things that that we need to do, we depend less on ourselves, or we maybe will forget how to do basic things.
Right. And we may not have such sharp minds because we're allowing our gadgets to remind us of everything, and then we may, if we don't have that gadget with us, we left it at home or it broke down or whatever, we may not be able to remember some things that we need to remember. So anyways, the point is, how much control do we really want to give up? That's a big part of this article, and that's some of the things we talked about yesterday. And I want to remind you about the QR codes there at the top of page 38. If you want to learn more and you want to practice your English even more, you can just go ahead and scan those codes, and you'll see skits. There's an introduction for this article and so forth, so I encourage you to do that. You can also go to our website at studioclassroom.com to view those. But right now we want you to open up your magazines to page 39, and we will have our first reading for today.
Instead of just doing what we command, many of the devices are being empowered with sophisticated software and microelectronics to act on their own initiative as our personal advisors. Seattle's Pith makes a smart furniture fabric called Backtracker, which the company says nags people to correct the way they sit if their poor posture might cause them back pain. A computerized fork from Happy Labs in Hong Kong admonishes users with lights and vibrations when they eat too fast. Mary Zerwinski, a Microsoft research manager and cognitive psychologist, said it's conceivable some machines might function for their owners as a kind of psychotherapist, noting that people will get so close to their devices they'll think, "What would I ever do without this?"
All right, some nice music there. Thank you, Marco. Marco's here in our studio, does a fantastic job. Well, as we begin day two, we start off with, instead of just doing what we command, many of the devices are being empowered with sophisticated software and microelectronics. And again, they're talking about here that these devices are able to act on their own. And you don't have to tell it what to do. Let's talk about microelectronics, Linda.
And microelectronics is the science and technology involved in the making and using of very small electronic parts.
Of course, you see the word micro there. That makes you think that something is small, right? And we think of the gadgets and so forth that we're using. A lot of them are small. And they can act on their own initiative. And if you act on your own initiative,
it's kind of like making your own decision.
Okay. As our personal advisors, you think of a personal advisor as a person, but in this case, they're talking about a device is advising you. So the devices are kind of taking the place of people. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, that's essentially what this paragraph is talking about, is that these machines or these gadgets are becoming so smart that they're replacing kind of people or, communities that we use now. So, for example, personal advisors, we might have gone to our parents or our doctor before, but now, you know, maybe our phone's going to be the one that tells us what we need to do something.
Okay, and I think they're kind of using this. Of course, they're advising you on some things, but I don't think it's very serious issues. You would still go to, you know, a mentor or a counselor or a friend for those kinds of things. But I think, of course, these devices can advise you on some simple things. Maybe you're very busy, and so that device can help you by giving you some information you need, or based upon your habits, it does it for you so you don't have to worry about it. Which sounds great in a lot of ways because it provides a lot of convenience. And then we have some funny examples here. We go to the city of Seattle and the company Pith. And what do they make, Linda?
They make smart furniture.
Smart furniture fabric. Not a smartphone, but smart furniture, okay?
Right. And this furniture will tell you if you are not sitting correctly, that you have bad posture, and for you to sit properly so that that doesn't create back pain.
And it nags you. Ooh. What do you think of when you think of the word nag, Ellen?
I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Yes, that's why I asked.
My mother.
Okay, and so what does that mean?
Well, often nag just means to constantly kind of tell you over and over again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure not just my mother does this, but many parents will often remind their kids to do something until they kind of fix the problem.
Yes, and it can be very annoying to kids, of course, but the parents love us. They're trying to help us out. I don't know if the smart furniture loves us, but that's the way it's programmed, and I would definitely need that reminder to sit up straight. So maybe I should invest in this smart furniture. Anyways, and we also have another example here. We go to Happy Labs in Hong Kong, and what happens with this device, Linda?
And it's a computerized fork that admonishes users to not eat so quickly. Right? And admonish here means to warn somebody, either not to do something or to do something.
Okay, and I would need this as well. They must have been reading my mind or something before they wrote this, because I eat very quickly. I don't know if our panelists do that. Do you have a problem with that, Ellen or Linda?
I'm the opposite. I eat too slowly, so maybe I need a fork to tell me to eat faster.
Okay, Ellen?
I definitely eat on the quicker side, so I would probably need this little gadget.
Okay. All right. Well, then we meet Mary Zerwinski. She is a Microsoft research manager, and she's also a cognitive psychologist. Listeners, if you don't know what that is, that's just a person who actually studies how people think. And that could get overwhelming to study how people think and maybe be very confusing, but I think that's quite interesting. And what does she tell us, Ellen?
Well, she says it's conceivable some machines might function for their owners as kind of a psychotherapist. And when we say conceivable, we just mean it is possible to imagine or to believe. So it's, you know, what she's saying, it could become one day that these gadgets become more than gadgets.
Okay. All right. And we also learn about the word psychotherapist, and that is a person who treats someone's mental problems by talking to them about their feelings. Okay. Instead of giving them just medication, they actually, you know, talk through things with them. And as we continue on here in line 16, we see that people are going to get close, so close to their devices that they may think, what would I ever do without this? Now, panelists, have you ever thought this? Have you ever left your smartphone at home and thought, what am I going to do today without my phone? Ellen?
Absolutely. I think for somebody who uses their smartphone a lot, it's probably one of the worst days you could have.
Oh.
You start a day and realize you forgot your phone at home. It's one of those, oh no. So yeah, definitely. I have had those days.
You go through like a state of panic when you first realize that you don't have the phone.
It's like withdrawal. You know, when you're addicted to something and suddenly it's taken away from
you.
Maybe
that's a sign you need to take a break.
Probably.
Okay, take a break from the relationship with the phone. Okay. That is a good question, though. And the more dependent we become upon technology, we may ask ourselves this question. And I think I may have mentioned this earlier yesterday, that when I first got my smartphone, I thought this is the best investment I've ever made. Maybe not ever, but you know what I'm saying. And so you think, how did I ever live without this?
Right.
And we think of the Internet. How do we ever live without the Internet? Right.
Yeah, that's how I felt when I got my first smartphone. And actually, I was a little reluctant or didn't want to get one immediately because of this fear that I'd be like too attached to
tethered
it.
Tethered.
Yeah, because I'd see other people who were always on their phone, and you know, I didn't want to be like them. But then when I got a smartphone, I became one of those people, you know,
yeah,
always on their smartphone. So, but I realized that, and so I've tried to not be so attached to it.
Well, it's good that you realized it. I don't know if some people realize it, or maybe they don't care. And different generations, I think differently about this. Maybe older generations think it's, for example, maybe rude to have your phone out at a dinner table. Maybe you're out at dinner with friends. The younger generation may think it's perfectly fine because maybe they all have their phones out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we do see that of course can hinder our relationships. We're talking about relationships with devices, but these devices could possibly hinder our relationships with people, right?
Right.
And as we take up a lot of our lives with, you know, these devices, they're supposed to help make our lives better, right? And maybe save our time, but does it really save our time? Or does it just take up more of our time? The more, you know, we spend on our phone or with other gadgets, it may in the end just take up more time. What are your thoughts on that, Ellen?
Yeah, I think if you aren't aware that you are spending so much time on it or that it is taking so much of your time, I think it could very easily become a hindrance to that. You know, I've heard the expression said that this generation or our generation has so many tools to connect to people. You know, we have a lot of internet tools to connect with people, but we're kind of one of the loneliest generations too, because we have kind of separated ourselves. You know, we are always on our phone.
Right.
So.
Or maybe we have more relationships, but maybe they're superficial as well. A lot of them anyways.
Or you lose touch with humanity, like mm-hmm. how the real world is, or how relationships used to be yes. traditionally. And also with the convenience of these smart gadgets, yes, we get things done faster, but it just also creates more work for us. We need to do more things. Mm-hmm. So it actually makes us busier.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's right. We live in a very, very busy society, a smart society, but a busy one. Okay, well, next we are going to talk about consent fatigue. Let's find out what that's about in our next reading for today.
Consent fatigue. Although experts say smart devices generally won't make decisions for people without at least initially seeking their consent, anybody hoping to approve every action their gadgets take would quickly suffer what researchers call consent fatigue. As a result, it's widely expected that people will give their devices the power to act independently, much, if not most, of the time. However, that could produce an unhealthy techno-dependency in people, resulting in them losing self-reliance and suffering a lack of depth and breadth of understanding about how the world works, according to a Microsoft forecast on the impact of smart devices in coming years. If we are not careful, undermining these values may make the world of 2020 a much less rewarding world to live in. Others worry that human and machine goals may conflict, particularly if individual and societal interests clash. If you're hospitalized with an illness, it's conceivable your doctor's smart software might oppose giving you an effective new antibiotic to limit the general population's risk of becoming resistant to the drug, Israeli researchers have speculated.
Are you tired, panelists? Are you tired of technology? We're talking about consent fatigue. First, the word consent, Ellen.
Consent is to give your permission.
Okay.
So, if you have had or do have a smartphone, oftentimes when you want to do something with the phone, for example, downloading an app of some sort, you always need to kind of sign in and agree that you want to download something.
Sure. And we see here that experts are saying that the smart devices, they won't actually make decisions that you don't like, okay? And that's a good thing, isn't it, Linda?
Yeah, definitely. We don't want to make decisions or the device to make decisions that we don't want.
Okay, and then they won't do this, of course, without initially seeking your consent. You have to give them permission. At least initially.
Right. So initially just meaning the first few times, most likely the first time, they will always ask your permission to do something. And then, depending on how you set up or personalize your device, it may or may not ask you after that.
And it says here you will probably get tired of approving everything. Okay. And then so that's why we have this whole idea of consent fatigue. And so you don't want to give permission maybe for everything. And so you could possibly give up even more control, right? It says as a result, it's widely expected that people will give their devices the power to act independently most of the time because they get tired of approving everything. And the first reason or the reason they wanted to get the device is probably for out of convenience. And it's inconvenient to have to approve everything. What are your thoughts, Ellen?
As we were reading this section, the one thought that popped into my head was, Facebook. There are a lot of different apps kind of things in Facebook where it will automatically post things to your Facebook feed or to your account. And, the first time you might have done it because you're interested in finding out more. But after that, sometimes you go, well, did I really give it permission to post 3,000 things on my feed or... something like that. So, I think sometimes it's good and sometimes it's really bad.
Okay, Linda, would you be a person you would feel that you have this consent fatigue, or do you like to be asked every time so you can give approval?
Well, at first, yeah, I would like it to ask me, but then after several times, like, it does become tiresome, always having to click that yes or no or ignore, you know. Mm-hmm.
There's no maybe so. They don't have maybe. That would just complicate things even more, right? So we do get tired of that, but at least if they give you the option, it's there. So if you want to give approval all the time, you can, but most people would probably just give up the power or the control to the devices. Okay, so however, that could produce an unhealthy techno-dependency. Now, listeners, you can probably figure out what techno-dependency is, but I think Ellen can help us understand that even more.
Sure. It is short for technology dependency. So, of course, technology is this idea of these gadgets, machines, and dependency, just, you know, this reliance on something.
Okay, and this could become very unhealthy, and this could result in people losing self-reliance and suffering a lack of depth and breadth of understanding how the world works. And we've talked about this some already, but they rely so much on the devices, they forget how the world actually works. And we have these two words, depth and breadth.
Right, so depth is how deep something is. And breadth is how wide something is. And earlier, Ellen mentioned that this generation is the loneliest generation, even though we have all this technology and all these devices to connect us to one another. And you see that in the kids today. They are always online or always on a computer, and they don't interact personally with other kids or other people, and so they're losing social skills.
Okay, all right. And this quote about the lack of depth and breadth is according to a Microsoft forecast on the impact of smart devices in coming years. And so they're looking to the future, and they have this forecast. I think of the weather when I see that, Ellen.
Yeah, I mean, forecast is just this look into the future, as Brandon mentioned. And I think, you know, going back to this idea of techno-dependency and not understanding how the world works, I think, you know, maps are a great example. You know, as Google Maps has kind of taken over the world, many people, including, you know, adults like us, maybe don't even know how to read a paper map anymore. We can't.
What is that?
We can't figure out where north, you know, east, west, and south is. Right. And it could be very dangerous if you are ever in an environment where you can't use technology.
Okay, that's a great point.
Yeah, and that also brings up the idea of how would we live in a world without technology? Or if we lost our cell phone or we couldn't use it for a period of time, would we be able to survive?
You know, going back to the States, when you've kind of lived abroad for a while and you don't necessarily have that data plan or that phone plan anymore, it can be very, very difficult.
It can be freeing as well.
It could, if you're not addicted to your phone.
For some people.
Right.
Well, there are other worries as well. What if the human and machine goals conflict, okay, or clash? What will happen then? Okay, so that could also be a problem. Maybe you want the machine to do one thing and it does another thing. We've probably seen that in some movies, right? Or the robot doesn't do what it's supposed to do, or it goes against its protocol, how it's programmed. And so, anyways, this could become a problem, especially on a larger scale. If we become so dependent, for example, going back to robots, sometimes that can be scary, thinking of giving a lot of power to a robot. What if it does something that you don't want it to do? I think of the movie I, Robot. I don't know if you've seen that, but robots are a big part of that movie as well. And what if the robots start to turn against people or something? Well, I don't know if that's likely to happen, but if we do have technology on such a large scale, there could be some conflicts involved.
Right. There have been actually several movies and reports or news on the dangers of artificial intelligence. And another movie that comes to mind, it wasn't on a robot, but it's talking about technology being dangerous, was Transcendence. I don't know if either of you saw that movie, but it had Johnny Depp in it. It didn't do so well in the theaters, but it was a very, presented an interesting problem, maybe something that I have to worry about in the future, but it's something that should probably be addressed today.
Okay, and what was that problem?
And Johnny Depp was a scientist, and he was dying, and his, pretty much his knowledge or his brain, so to speak, was uploaded to the internet. And through the internet, he was able to take control of machines, of devices, and eventually people. So although it's something maybe far into the future, but it just reminds us maybe the dangers that technology might bring.
The potential dangers. And in our last example here on page 39 for today, the last example for today, it says, if you're hospitalized with an illness, it's conceivable your doctor's smart software might actually not give you the medicine you need. And why is that, Ellen?
Well, it might be an idea to limit the resistance of the general public against this particular medicine or antibiotic, as we see.
Okay, and so that could be a scary situation where you need particular medication and some software says, nope, you can't have it. It's bad for the general public. And so the Israeli researchers are speculating here. And if you speculate, of course, that means you have an opinion about something. All the evidence or all the facts are not there. You're kind of making guesses based upon the evidence that you do have in front of you. Well, we are at the end of day two of our society article, but we have one more day to talk about living in a smart society. So we hope you will join us again tomorrow. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.